Hey, yo, this is your AEW St. Patrick's Day Slam / Dynamite review for March 16, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. It was 1 year ago on this very show. It was the St. Patrick's Day Slam edition of Dynamite that Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa had the main event all to themselves, the first ever all-female main event on AEW Dynamite. They went one-on-one in a non-sanctioned lights-out match. Of course, that was the night that Britt Baker, even though Thunder Rosa got the win, that was the night that Britt Baker ended up a bloody mess. And of course, she went on to become the AEW Women's Champion, a title that she has held up until today for 290 days. Ever since Double or Nothing, I believe it was Double or Nothing last year, Britt Baker has been the AEW Women's Champion. Day number 291 begins a new reign. Thunder Rosa, who won the championship tonight in her hometown of San Antonio inside of a steel cage. They had the main event yet again, all to themselves. This time it was sanctioned, and Thunder Rosa got the win when it counted. Both women bled again. Both women ended up in thumbtacks again. But I thought they had a fun main event. It was great to see Rosa get her moment in her hometown. It felt too soon at Revolution. I thought maybe they would hold off until Vegas, but it worked out nicely tonight. Being in San Antonio, they could have the main event all to themselves. It was built around them. They gave them time. And I thought they, first of all, they had a much better match, much more fun than the one they had at Revolution. They had tons of interference in that match at the pay-per-view. It was all done to set up the stipulation tonight. There was no Jamie Hayter. There was no Rebel. They never came out. They never tried to get in. It was left one-on-one between these two women. Much better than their match at the pay-per-view. And again, very happy to see Thunder Rosa finally get her moment. It's been, you know, I'd say it's been building for a while. They got away from the story for a long time before they finally circled back around to it. And again, you know, the part of the build felt a little weak. It just felt like it wasn't ready to reach that peak just yet. But in front of the right crowd, and tonight was the right crowd, under the right circumstances, and tonight was the right circumstance, I thought it made for a very memorable moment for Thunder Rosa. And a lot of people are going to now be very happy, because I know some people were tired of seeing Britt Baker as the women's champion. They were ready to see some new blood take over and end up with the belt, and so we'll see. I could see one more match between these two. You know, Baker got the win at Revolution. Rosa won tonight. Baker could have justification for a rematch. We might get this match one more time in May at Double or Nothing in another stipulation match. I think we're headed, though, very soon for a match between Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. I don't know if we're going to get the Rosa match first, but it's pretty clear to me that the issues between the two of them are going to blow over very soon. Wardlow, there was another championship match tonight. Wardlow had his shot at the TNT title. And he won the Face of the Revolution ladder match at Revolution. That earned him the right to challenge for the championship against Scorpio Sky. I told you last week exactly where this was headed. What did I say last week when I made my predictions? I said Thunder Rosa will end up the new champion, guaranteed 100%. Take it to the bank. Wardlow, take it to the bank, will not be the TNT champion. Scorpio Sky will not be a transitional champion. In fact, it worked out exactly the way that I said it would. Not only did Wardlow not win the title, he did not win the title because MJF and Sean Spears came out and they made sure he did not win the title. It seemed pretty obvious to me where this was headed. Played out exactly the way that I thought it would. MJF got beat by CM Punk at Revolution. Wardlow, in his mind, contributed to his loss. When he depended on him to come out and come to his aid, he wasn't there for him. Therefore, in his mind, he cost him a win against CM Punk. And tonight, he returned in kind. Wardlow coming out last week and asking, you know, to calmly, politely part ways, even though he's still under contract to MJF. We'll just go our separate ways. I mean, I don't know anybody in their right mind who thought that's exactly how the story was going in. So MJF got one over on him tonight. So that issue is now being taken to the next stage, which is going to be a match between MJF and Wardlow. Question is, how long do we have to wait until we get there? Can they put this off until the next pay-per-view? We got a lot of time. We got over 2 months before Double or Nothing. I don't think they could wait that long to do the first match. And then we had the Hardys. Matt and Jeff making their in-ring AEW debut tonight against Private Party. This was a match that was announced late in the day. It was added to the card. And boy, the fans in San Antonio were very happy to see the Hardys. And you can say a lot of things about the Hardy Boys and, you know, is this going to end up being a nostalgia act and how long are the crowds going to be hot for the Hardys for? I don't know. But I will say this. In San Antonio tonight, for Jeff Hardy in particular, this crowd went fucking nuts for Jeff Hardy. They were very happy. The two most over people in the building tonight, Thunder Rosa and Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy was an honorary Texan. He could have come out tonight in the sombrero like Thunder Rosa did for her entrance in the main event. They would have popped even louder. So the Hardys were over. And they got a win over Private Party as they begin what I'm sure will be their march to an eventual AEW Tag Team Championship match. Super chats are open. They're flooding in. I'm going to read each and every single one of your messages, and I thank you for everybody who sends one. For everybody who does, easy for me to say, sends one in. I will be reading them a little bit later on. And let's get those likes up. Let's see if we can hit that like button, get those likes up, because it does, in fact, help the video out a great deal. So we open tonight with the AEW World Champion. We had Hangman Adam Page, who was in the opening trios match, teaming up with the AEW Tag Team Champions, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, to take on Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly. We had Red Dragon isolating the Dinosaur early on in the corner, made the hot tag to Hangman. He ran wild on everybody. He hit Fish with a fallaway slam. He hit a pescado on Adam Cole and Kyle, and then a tope on both, one on each side. See that super chat right there? That's the old WWE 2K game. I bought my copy of 2K22. I only first dove into it yesterday, so I'm still getting familiar with it, but Sound Off Gamer is on the way back. It's coming back. So that's something for everybody to look forward to. And the graphics do look better than that mangled Ultimate Warrior super chat, so that's good. That's good. Hangman hit a pop-up powerbomb to Bobby Fish for a near fall. And Fish was able to avoid an early attempt at the buckshot lariat. Jungle Boy wiped everybody out with a flip dive. The highlight of the match, there was a triple moonsault spot with the baby faces, because everybody's got to fly. Everybody's got to fly. Everybody's got to dive. So they did it at the same time. We had Luchasaurus doing a moonsault off the apron to the floor at the same time that Hangman, in the same corner, came off the top with an Orihara moonsault to the floor at the same time that Jungle Boy hit a moonsault on Bobby Fish in the ring, only got a near fall out of it. And with the referee distracted, Adam Cole landed a kick on Jungle Boy. Red Dragon isolated the boy into the picture-in-picture. Came back from the break. Jungle Boy got to Luchasaurus. He came in, chokeslammed Bobby Fish onto Kyle O'Reilly, hit a standing moonsault double pin for a two count only. O'Reilly put Luchasaurus in a knee bar. That got broken up. And then the two Adams tagged in to a big pop. Everybody was very excited here to see Adam Cole and Adam Page in the ring together. They slugged it out for a little bit until Page hit the Deadeye. Page and Luchasaurus, actually, this was the other highlight of the match. Page and Luchasaurus, they pick up Cole and O'Reilly on their shoulders. And Jungle Boy climbs up to the top rope, and he hits a double doomsday device on both men for a great near fall. That wasn't even the finish. That was only for a near fall. We see all of these spectacular spots, and nobody wins with them. That's my issue. Only got a near fall. Fish and O'Reilly, they cleared Page and Luchasaurus to the floor. Cole got a blind tag, and he lowered the boom to the back of Jungle Boy's head for the win. It was a hot opener. I thought the match was good. It was a hot opener, though. The people were into it. They were popping for everything. And it made sense, I think, for Adam Cole to win because clearly he's headed for a rematch. He's going to be getting an AEW Championship rematch at some point with Hangman Page. And so him pinning one half of the tag team champions didn't really, you know, bother me too much. So it made sense, you know, for the direction that they're going in, this made sense. Tony Schiavone was in the back with Keith Lee, Ricky Starks, and Powerhouse Hobbs. No, they're not together, but for whatever reason, he was interviewing all three of them. And Schiavone mentioned that Keith Lee is going to be facing Max Caster of the Acclaimed on Rampage Friday night. Ricky Starks started talking trash about Keith Lee, and, you know, if you show up on my show again, Will Hobbs is going to treat you the way he did last week when Hobbs hit that spine buster on Rampage on Keith Lee. Stark said the same thing is going to happen again, and Lee reminded him that he took him out like a little bitch. And he had Hobbs out there to save him, and Keith Lee said he would see them on Friday. The best part about this that I can say is that Keith Lee is no longer speaking as if he is auditioning for the role of Hamlet. He's talking like a normal person. That's all I ever asked for. Just talk like a normal dude. Talk like a normal dude, go out there and throw people around. You do that, and Keith Lee will get over. Not that hard. Lord Frieza. I just saw that name out of the corner of my eye. What's going on, Lord Frieza? I feel like I haven't heard from you in some time. What's up, Frieza? I hope you and the family are doing well. John Moxley and Bryan Danielson with William Regal in their corner against Chuck Taylor and Wheeler Yuta of Best Friends. Regal was actually not in their corner for this match. Regal joined Excalibur, Jim Ross, and Tony Schiavone on commentary. His reaction to seeing Danhausen for the first time. This was the first time on television that William Regal has been exposed to Danhausen. And he doesn't know what to make of this man. He is looking at this man. And he, first of all, on commentary, Regal refers to Excalibur as the man with the mask, right? So then he sees Danhausen and he asks the question. He goes, "Pray tell, man with the mask, who is this demon waif?" Now, I feel like William Regal can almost say anything, whether I understand what it means or not, and it's going to sound funny. So I had to look up waif. I'm sure it wasn't anything pleasant. So I looked it up. I was just curious what a, I know what a demon is, but what is a waif? Right? I'm not from that part of the world, so I don't know these things. So for the benefit of those who might not know, this is the exact definition. There's actually two of them. There's two definitions of what a waif is. One is a homeless, neglected, or abandoned person, especially a child, or a young person who is thin and looks unhealthy or uncared for. I'm going to assume that he was referring to the second definition. Danhausen does look a little malnourished. I'm not gonna lie. He does look a little malnourished when he's out there. I don't know if I would call him a demon per se, but that was William Regal's reaction to seeing Danhausen for the first time. Before I go any further, and I'm going to talk more about this in the podcast on Sunday, episode 748. If you have not had a chance to listen to Talk is Jericho, William Regal is the guest this week on Talk is Jericho. The first episode, apparently he's going to be on two. Because in the first part, he went on for so long about his health issues and his health scares in the past and his surgeries and his near-death experiences. He even apologized to Jericho. He said, "I kind of just go off on a tangent sometimes." And Jericho just let him speak. I mean, this was scary shit. And it's a miracle that this guy is still alive. So he went on for so long. I guess there's a second part that might be dropping next week, and then they get into the wrestling stuff. But it's fascinating to hear him talk about all of the health issues with his neck. You know, what struck me is him talking about the heart issue. You know, when he got pericarditis many years ago, he gets into detail about that, what that means for his health. You know, the pericardium is like a protective sac around your heart. I perked up when I heard that because, and some of you probably remember this, about 5 years ago, I got pericarditis. I ended up in the hospital for 3 days. So as soon as I heard that, he's talking about his experience and long-term what it means for him. My ears went up right away. It's pretty scary stuff. So anyway, if you have not had a chance to listen to it, I think it's worth a listen. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. And any chance to listen to William Regal, not a bad way to spend your time. So Moxley went right for Chuck Taylor as soon as Best Friends got into the ring. I mean, he didn't waste any time at all. And he went right after Chuck, took him out to the floor. That left Brian in the ring to work over Wheeler Yuta. Yuta finally, after a few minutes, tagged Chuck in. He landed a plancha on Moxley before locking Danielson in a single leg crab. Danielson got a tag to Moxley. He took out Chuck. They went into a commercial. Coming out of the break, Yuta hit a German suplex bridge for two. There was a brief distraction from Danielson that allowed Moxley to hit a jumping cutter and a heart attack. Moxley hit a DDT on Chuck on the floor, and Excalibur called it a paradigm shift. So apparently now they've gotten so lazy with this that a normal DDT, a regular normal DDT, like a Jake Roberts DDT, is now a paradigm shift. So good to know. In the ring, Yuta fired up on Danielson. He got taken out, though, with a Saito suplex. Danielson landed some kicks, hit a shoulder capture suplex on Yuta for a near fall. Brian seemed impressed by the resilience of young Wheeler Yuta here. He tagged in Moxley, who grabbed the bulldog choke. And Wheeler Yuta, he was going to go out, so he had no choice but to tap out. And Danielson and Moxley pick up the win in only their second tag team match together. After the match, Regal left the booth. He went into the ring. He shook hands with Danielson, shook hands with Moxley. Best Friends and Danhausen, they went to go leave. Right? With Yuta, they're gonna go leave. And they're walking up the ramp. And all of a sudden, Yuta stops. And he turns around. And he's looking at the ring. And he turns back around, looks at Best Friends, Danhausen, Orange Cassidy, Trent. And he turns around and he walks back to the ring. So Yuta gets up on the apron. He climbs into the ring. And he puts his hand out. He's going to shake William Regal's hand. And Regal has he has a smile on his face, and he looks down at Wheeler Yuta holding his hand out. And Regal blasted him in the face. He slapped the shit out of this guy. He blasted him in the face so hard he knocked him into the dark realm. You could hear this thing throughout the... I think they had 6,000 people or something like that in the building tonight. You could hear this slap all the way, I'm sure, into the upper deck. We got Bryant, right? Bryant Becerra is joining us tonight live. I saw your super chat. He was in the building. He was at the show tonight. Bryant, I want you to chime in. I don't know where you were sitting, but I want to know when Regal slapped this guy across the face, what it sounded like as somebody who was in the building. Holy shit. I will say, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, the most wicked slap that I have ever heard on a wrestling show. And no, it's not Stephanie McMahon. Well, actually, it is Stephanie McMahon. I take that back. I was going to say, it wasn't Stephanie McMahon during the Authority era, but it was actually Stephanie McMahon. It was one of her earliest slaps. This is back in 2000 or 2001. I think it was 2000. It was in the back in the hallway. She slapped Chris Benoit so hard. You have to find this somewhere and go back and listen to it. And then he smiled and he laughed in her face. It was creepy, especially looking back on it now. It's even creepier. But this slap is up there. It's pretty high up there. So after he slaps him, Yuta, he ricochets back and he's staring at Regal like he's going to do something. But then, he calms himself down and Regal smiles and he tells him, he's not on the mic or anything, but you can hear Regal. He goes, prove yourself some more. Go ahead and prove yourself some more. And he says, for now, head on to the back, sunshine. Yuta got loud Yuta chants from this crowd in San Antonio. I thought that was great. The match itself was fine. It was, nothing out of the ordinary. I enjoy watching Moxley and Danielson as a team. The match itself was fine. The post-match, though, was great. The match seemed to be designed to shine a spotlight on Yuta, so the post-match would make sense with him coming back and wanting to shake hands with Regal and kind of earn his respect. And it's exactly the sort of thing I was hoping to see from Danielson and Moxley when they first started this whole storyline. And I said, coming out of Revolution, you know, they'll have a match. And coming out of the pay-per-view, I hope that they can put their differences aside and they can run with them as a team or a small faction for a while. And maybe bring a couple of young guys under their wing. And it looks potentially like we may be heading in that direction. Now, I had no idea they were going to add William Regal to the act. That makes it even better. But, you know, we'll see where it leads. You know, the names that were always floated, like when Danielson would do an interview and whatnot, Daniel Garcia, he always mentioned Daniel Garcia. Well, Daniel Garcia is occupied. He's off sports entertaining now with Chris Jericho. So he's out of the picture. But he also would name drop Wheeler Yuta and Lee Moriarty and I think Lee Johnson and people like that. So why not take a Wheeler Yuta and maybe one other person under their wing? You can have a little group, a little fight club, whatever you want to call it. I love the idea. Don't know if that's what they're thinking or if they're just going to work matches against the younger guys just to kind of, you know, give them a little bit of rub, even though they're kicking their ass. It's not like they're winning against them, but I like the idea. I like the idea a lot. So we'll see. And actually, the other name that I thought of, even though I know he's part of Team Taz, he's Taz's boy, and I think he'll end up with the FTW title before long. But what about Hook? What if at some point Danielson, you know, as Hook starts to win more matches, Danielson in particular, maybe he's coming out, Regal comes out on the ramp. He's like trying to scout this kid's matches and they're really impressed and they want to bring Hook in. They think they could really help him and steer him in the right direction. And, you know, Hook doesn't seem to have any interest and he's kind of put off by the whole thing. But after a while, they kind of, you know, they wear on him and they wear on him. And eventually, I mean, what would that be like? You have a little faction with Moxley, Danielson, maybe one other person and fucking Hook with William Regal running the show? That sounds badass. So we had FTR. What about Veer? That's the wrong show. Don't you know Veer is still coming? You leave Veer alone. FTR is backstage, and they're talking about their very abrupt firing last week of Tully Blanchard, which came out of nowhere. I talked about how awkward and weird that whole thing was, that like it was inserted into the show without any real context to it at all. So they fired him. So Tully Blanchard is no longer with FTR. I'm not sure if Tully Blanchard is going to come back. And Cash Wheeler is talking and he says, you know, it wasn't an easy decision for them to make. Tully was just checked out. He says when they won the titles, he was laser focused. And when they lost them, Tully lost focus. So here come the Young Bucks, and they go, well, 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 the Young Bucks and FTR back together again. They tell FTR to fire their barber and fire their stylist. They're making fun of, you know, how they're dressed. And Matt Jackson said, look, you guys can hire the best manager in the world, the best there is. It's not going to make a difference because deep down inside, they'll always be the second best team in AEW. Now, I know a lot of you are thinking the same thing that I'm thinking. Was this a blatant overt tease for Bret Hart, Bret the Hitman Hart, coming in to manage FTR? Everybody makes fun of me for being a Bret Hart mark and all that. Well, you know what? The only bigger Bret Hart marks are FTR. They love Bret. Cash Wheeler literally beat the fuck out of a guy. He put his fist right in his face when they tried to attack Bret. Well, the guy did attack Bret at the Hall of Fame a few years ago. Cash Wheeler immediately, it's like, you know, you would think that it was his father or something or his grandfather out there. And Dax Harwood has talked a lot about what a big fan he is of Bret. And Bret's a fan of theirs as well. In fact, when they got released or they left WWE, I think Bret sent them a very nice text. You guys are going to do well. You putting them over. So this was most definitely meant to be a tease. Now, are they just fucking with us? Is Bret coming in for one appearance? Is Bret going to come in and basically manage them full time? We don't know. But as I thought about this, a thought occurred to me. I got very excited because we could very well be looking at a situation where we end up with Bret Hart coming into AEW to manage FTR against Jon Moxley and Brian Danielson, managed by William Regal. You could have Regal leading Moxley and Danielson, and we get at least, I don't know if it'll be a program or just a one-off. That's a fucking match I would love to see. That would be a fucking fantastic match. So I'm hoping it happens. I don't know that, I don't know about Bret Hart in that role on a full-time basis. I'm not totally sold on that, just because I don't know if that's something Bret wants to do. I don't know. I've never seen Bret as a manager, like a full-time manager. He's come in, he's managed Natty and stuff. We've seen him do a match here and there. That's why I said, maybe for like one or two matches. I don't know about him coming in full-time like Tully. I don't even know if he would want to do that. But even if it was a one-time thing, shit, I would love to see it. You kidding me? I would love to see that match. Everybody say, I see some people mentioning Cornette in the chat. Yeah, you know what? Cornette would be the perfect person because he's a big FTR guy. The heat that he would get in AEW, especially if you did something with FTR in the Bucks and you put Cornette in their corner. But, you know, again, the hatred is real. Cornette does not want to have anything to do with the Young Bucks or AEW. And I believe him when he says that. So that and the fact that, as somebody in the chat also said, I don't think he's leaving his house. As long as there's still a pandemic going on, I don't think Cornette's left his house in 2 years. So no, Jim Cornette is not coming in to manage FTR. So Bret Hart would be the next best thing. So then we had Chris Jericho, Jake Hager, 2.0, and Daniel Garcia. They were out next for the commencement ceremony for the newly christened Jericho Appreciation Society. Holy shit! Look at this! JM doing the run-in here on the stream. Dropping the $200 bomb! The Beth Phoenix super chat. You know what? That deserves some confetti. We got to bring the confetti down here. Look at it's a fucking party tonight. I just happened to look out of the corner of my eye and I saw that. I'm glad I did. JM, holy shit. Coming in hot with the Beth Phoenix $200 bomb. Holy fucking shit. Well, you know what? The least I could do. Least I could do is butt in and read yours right. I'm not even going to wait. I'm going to read yours right now. JM says, hey, yo, that was some good, wholesome, gory self-mutilation. Oh, indeed it was. It was indeed some good, gory self-mutilation. Love the finish with the uncharacteristically legal counters by Rosa to the lockjaw. Survey says, one more for the good gals. JM, you the man. Thank you, sir. Where was I? And we go from that to the Jericho Appreciation Society. That's quite the come down, but I shall do my best. Matt Lee starts talking. Now, you know when Matt Lee is talking because he's very loud. Matt Lee is very loud. He's not somebody you ever have to lean in to hear what he's saying. Oh, he's too low. He's a low talker. No, he's not. So Matt Lee starts out, he's saying the only reason the fans get to sing Judas, because they're still singing Jericho's song when he comes out, because the only reason they get to sing Judas is because Chris Jericho made it possible. He said, Jericho is a better man than me. Then his partner Jeff Parker starts talking, and Parker says Jericho deserves to be praised and idolized for his contributions, not only to wrestling, but also as a human being. Jericho says, if there was no Chris Jericho, there would be no AEW. But instead of praising me, people complain and they insult me on social media. He says he reads it all and it hurts his feelings. Says he's the greatest performer in history and the fans don't appreciate him. He said, well, the inner circle may not appreciate Jericho, but these men do. And that is why they are the Jericho Appreciation Society. And he says they don't relate to the rest of the AEW roster because the rest of the roster are just pro wrestlers. Jericho is not that. He goes, Jericho is not a pro wrestler. He calls himself a sports entertainer. Daniel Garcia gets on the mic. He stops Jericho as if he's offended by this because you know, Daniel Garcia, he goes around, he's the quintessential professional wrestler, right? He's like the fucking Zack Sabre Jr. of the American independent scene. So he's acting as if he's greatly offended by this, like he might turn on Jericho here. And he goes, if you call yourself a sports entertainer, then I am too. And he looks into the camera and he says, I am a sports entertainer. Instant heat. If you want to get instant heel heat on this show, just call yourself a sports entertainer. It works every time. So then Jericho talked about Garcia, and he talked about the car accident that Garcia was in a number of years ago with a bunch of, I don't know how many it was, if it was one or two, it was at least one. Other independent wrestler, was a big car accident on January the 6th. 2019, and Jericho talked about how he donated thousands of dollars to their recovery. And as he's talking about this, I just thought to myself, so Jericho finally admits to donating thousands of dollars to a cause on January 6th. Well, it's about time he admitted to it. I wasn't sure where he was going with this promo until he stuck the 2019 in there. Once he specified he was talking about 2019, it was like, oh, okay. But in any event, maybe he was talking about his wife. But Garcia, you know, in that accident, Garcia did suffer some pretty brutal leg injury. He was talking about a broken tibia or fibia or whatever it was. A lot of broken bones in his leg, and I'm sure Jericho did contribute. Jericho has actually contributed to a lot of GoFundMes and stuff for wrestlers when, you know, there's a medical need or something. You see his name on the list, you know, dropping $1,000 or $2,500 or whatever it is. So, you know, I can believe that's a legitimate story. Jericho called 2.0 a bad name from bad creative. Of all the people to be talking about bad names, some of the things that he has trademarked or tried to trademark recently, I don't know if Jericho should be the one to be talking about that. But anyway, he called 2.0 a bad name. He said, from now on, they're going to be going by their real, as everybody in this group, I guess, is going to, they're going to be going by their real names. And he referred to Matt Lee as Daddy Mac, Matt Menard, and the other guy, Jeff Parker, as Cool Hand Ange, Angelo Parker. I assume those are their real names. We know Jake Hager is his real name, and I laugh because Chris Jericho is not his real name. So, in fact, everybody else in the group, Daniel Garcia, they're all going to go by their real names. Chris Jericho is not his real name. But I don't think we're going to be seeing him come out on TV as Chris Irvin anytime soon. So I thought that, I guess he's exempt. He's the leader of the group. I guess that means he's exempt from the rules. Is it a BTE? Is people saying BTE bit? Well, I haven't watched BTE. I shouldn't have to watch BTE to make sense of what's going on this TV show. So then he tells a story about staying on 2.0 for a second. He told a story about getting a call from his former best friend, who I'm sure is a certain man who's going to be interviewing Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania this year. And this friend of his asked him if he wouldn't mind getting these two guys after they got fired by WWE, if he wouldn't mind having them on his podcast to try to get them some attention so that they might end up getting a job somewhere. And in fact, Jericho said when they got together and he got to meet these guys and he realized the passion they had and everything, he got them into AEW, and here they are. So Jericho referred to Jake Hager as his ride or die, talked about how he saved his life in Dubai once upon a time, which is a true story. He asked them who they are, and Hager said they are the Jericho Appreciation Society, and they beat up pro wrestlers. Jericho said to remember the date, because March 16, 2022 is the beginning of the era of the sports entertainer in AEW. I thought they did a good job of at least trying to explain the lame name. Jericho Appreciation Society, it might fit with him being a delusional heel, but in his mind, of course, he's not delusional, but it's still a bad name. But I like that they at least took the time to try to explain where the whole appreciation aspect of it comes from. And he went down the line, everybody in the group, from Hager to, well, Hager's just, I mean, he's just appreciative to have a fucking job, probably. But Garcia 2.0. You know, he went into some very real stories about why these guys would be appreciative of him. So they at least tried to explain the genesis of the name. And I thought it served its purpose. This probably went on a little too long, but it did what it was supposed to do. And I will also say, I like 2.0. I like them when they first got into NXT. I didn't know too much about them. People said, you got to look up 3.0, because that's what they were on the independent scene. You got to look them up. You got to look them up. They're very entertaining. They're going to become stars in NXT. And they didn't, because they were never pushed. So they had some comedy skits, and they never really did anything else with them. But they are entertaining together. I think now if we get to see more of them, more of their personality on TV, Daniel Garcia is very good in the ring, but he hasn't had a chance to show much personality himself. Now that he's calling himself a sports entertainer, we're going to see. How much charisma does this kid have? Does he have any? Or is he as exciting as a piece of fucking, wet cardboard? I don't know. Maybe that was the point of putting Garcia with Jericho, because Jericho feels, or, you know, AEW feels like they have to kind of bring the personality out of him. It's not a bad idea. So let's see. Let's see how far they can go. Again, I like the pairing. So then we had Wardlow one-on-one against Scorpio Sky for the TNT Championship, the two winners of the most recent two Face of the Revolution. Actually, I think they're the only two Face of the Revolution ladder matches they've held so far. Scorpio Sky won last year. Wardlow won this year. Dan Lambert, Paige Van Zandt, and her husband, MMA fighter Austin Vanderford. I'm going to try to say his name again. Austin Vandervleur. Vanderford. There it is. Vandervleuren. No, it's Austin Vanderford. He's married to Paige Van Zandt. He came out as well. Dan Lambert had the interim TNT belt around his waist. So Scorpio Sky's carrying the main one. I guess he gave the other one to Lambert as a gift. 371 days unbeaten, we were told, for Scorpio Sky coming into this match. On the surface, that sounded impossible to me, but I'm going to assume that they're not making that up. That's over a year undefeated. It's less impressive when you think that Scorpio Sky really hasn't done much on television in about a year. So whatever matches he's had on Dark and stuff like that, he hasn't really been on Dynamite or Rampage much over the past year until recently. So all of a sudden, it's not as impressive as it sounds on the surface, but he has been unbeaten for quite some time. So on the outside, Van Zandt and Vanderford were distracting Wardlow. And her husband got right up in Wardlow's face, and he was about to beat this man up. And here comes Scorpio Sky with a basement drop kick through the ropes, knocks down Wardlow. They go to a break, they come back, and Sky is taunting Wardlow, and Wardlow fights back, ends up hitting three power bombs. He's going to go for the power bomb symphony here for the finish. And when Wardlow goes for the fourth one, he's going to try for a fourth power bomb. Dan Lambert distracted him. That allowed Scorpio Sky to roll out to the floor. Here comes Sean Spears. Sean Spears walks out. He's got chairs in his hands. He walks out on the ramp. MJF then comes from out of nowhere. Wardlow's out on the floor. And here comes MJF, and he shoves Wardlow face first into the ring post. Referee doesn't see any of this because the referee is distracted. Scorpio Sky rolls Wardlow up once Wardlow is back in the ring. Scorpio rolls him up with a stacked pin, and he pins Wardlow to retain the TNT Championship. So a very anticlimactic finish, but it should have been a predictable finish to anybody who's been paying attention to this stuff. And if you heard what I was talking about last week, it seemed pretty obvious where this was going, which was MJF was going to get involved in some way. He was going to fuck this man out of the TNT title, and that's exactly what he did. And it made for a lackluster finish, but it was the predictable finish. After the match, Vanderford jumped in the ring. He landed some punches on Wardlow. MJF was in the corner. Wardlow shrugs off Vanderford. He shrugs off Spears, and he locks eyes with MJF. And the place pops because MJF, Wardlow has this murder stare in his eyes. He's going to tear this man limb from limb. And MJF goes to try to escape, exit the ring. Wardlow grabs him, brings him back in, sets him up for a powerbomb, but Sean spears from behind with a chair shot. And actually, he gave him a whole series of chair shots. And Wardlow ends up on his knees. Spears hits him with a chair shot to the head. Wardlow tried to get his hand up, and he got his hand up, but the chair shot was such that it clearly went over his hand. He hit this guy in the head with a fucking chair. That's what he did. And MJF passed some money off to Dan Lambert, so you know, they talked about this being a payoff. I'm not sure exactly what he paid for. What was the payoff for? Why did MJF have to pay Dan Lambert for him interfering in the match and costing Wardlow the match? I don't really, you know, they didn't really explain what exactly was the payoff for. He could have interfered in the match without paying the guy anything. I'm sure Scorpio Sky would have been very appreciative to have the help. Anyway, he paid him off, and MJF ends up punching Wardlow in the head with the Dynamite Diamond Ring to end the segment. So, you know, this, it wasn't terribly exciting, but again, it was the finish that made sense for the storyline they're telling, which is that MJF lost to CM Punk because Wardlow wasn't there for him, and so he paid him back. And when Wardlow had the biggest match of his career, challenging for the championship, MJF was there to take it away from him. If I can't have my win, you can't either. So storyline-wise, it worked, because now they're building to an eventual match between Wardlow and MJF. This was not the right time to put that title on Wardlow. But then it was time. It was time for the AEW in-ring debut of the Hardys. Remember, they're not the Hardy Boys. The Hardy Boys are no more. They're no longer boys. When you get into your mid to late 40s, you cease being a boy. You are now a middle-aged man. But since middle-aged Hardys doesn't really have the same ring to it, we'll just call them the Hardys or the Hardy Brothers. So the Hardys come out. We got the classic Hardys entrance, of course, with the music. Huge ovation for the Hardys. And Jeff in particular. Jeff Hardy was incredibly over for the entrance, for the match, for the post-match. Jeff Hardy was, again, outside of Thunder Rosa, the most over person on this entire show. And he was out there in the paint, dressed just like he was the last time we saw him on SmackDown. And the people went nuts for him. Which is why Jeff Hardy has never had a problem. Despite his past issues, he has never had a problem finding employment. Because if you are a star in the wrestling business, if you are a star as big as Jeff Hardy is, and you have the fan base that he has, it is impossible to conceive that any promoter, if Jeff Hardy suddenly became available, would not want to snatch him right up. And Jeff seems to be doing well the last few years, which is great. But even when Jeff was at his worst, Jeff never struggled to find work. Because he's always been over. Not a lot of people can say that. You know, Jeff is really, I know he's never going to be looked at on the same level as the top names in the business because he was never that big. He's not with Austin and Rock and people like that, but Jeff is up in that category with those top names of guys who have been over at a high level for an extended period of, I'm talking years, 10, 15, 20 years. 2022, the guy is still over. Not a lot of people can say that. And there aren't very many stars left like that. So the Hardys isolated Mark Quinn with frequent tags. The referee was distracted. At one point, Private Party crotched Matt Hardy around the ring post. And that allowed them to take control heading into the commercial break. Back from the break, Mark Quinn used a distraction to land a brutal dive. He did a dive out over the top rope, same dive we've seen people on this show do a million times, but it looked like he landed right on Matt's head. And even the announcers reacted like, ooh, that looked bad. But thankfully, it looked like Matt was okay. He didn't look any worse for wear in the final moments of the match. He eventually got the hot tag to Jeff, and when I say hot, you know, I almost feel like I overuse that word sometimes. It's what you call that spot when you have a babyface in peril and they're struggling to tag their partner and they get foiled and they try again and finally they make the tag. it's the hot tag. But in some cases, it's not really all that hot. They'll get the tag, the people go, yay, and then, you know, it's not that big of a deal. This was a hot tag. When he got the tag, the place exploded. It's like Randy Orton. Go back and watch that triple threat match last week, that excellent triple threat tag team match, the Raw tag team titles on Raw last week, where RK-Bro won the belts back. There was a point in that match when Orton tagged in, the place went nuts. Again, certain people who are so over, crowd will always react at a high level. And Jeff is one of those people. So Jeff tags into the match, place comes unglued. He runs wild on Isaiah Cassidy. He went up for the Swanton Bomb, but Marquand crotched him on the top rope. Matt hit a side effect on Marquand, and then Jeff hit a top rope. Actually, I think he was on the middle rope on the inside, but he hit a splash off the ropes onto Cassidy for a near fall. Cassidy countered a twist of fate. Matt was able to stuff the silly string attempt. Each Hardy hit twists of fate on each member of Private Party, and Jeff then landed the Swanton Bomb for the win. That did not look fun to take. I commented once on the podcast, in recent years, Jeff Hardy, he's in pain, and he's talked about how, you know, like on live events and stuff, he wouldn't always hit the Swanton Bomb anymore. He would save it for TV and pay-per-views because it takes a toll on his body. You know, Jeff's getting older. Jeff's 40, whatever, early 40s now, I think. And so he's starting to feel all the bumps and all the dives and all the crazy stuff that he's done. So you can almost pinpoint several years ago the exact time when Jeff stopped doing the Swanton Bomb where his head would hit the opponent and he just started landing with his entire body on his opponent, using them like as a crash pad. So I actually think it looks even more devastating now when he hits the Swanton Bomb because he just comes down straight down with all of his body weight on his opponent. But the only reason he does that is, again, it makes the bump easier for his body to absorb. Anyway, the Hardys pick up the win in their first AEW match. After the match, here comes Andrade El Idolo. And I heard a little voice in my head. You know, I was wondering, when I heard the music, nobody came out at first. But I said, it sounds like Andrade's music. And then a little voice, a little Andrade voice in my head said, "How you know? How you know?" "Oh, I know." Here comes Andrade, and I guess the newly christened Andrade family office. He's got the butcher, he's got the blade, he's got, I think the bunny was out there. Jose, his assistant, is with him. So they come out, they stroll down, they surround the ring, and we hear Darby Allin's music. Here comes Sting and Darby Allin. Boy, Sting had a tough day at the office tonight. You know, he has to put all that face paint on. He comes out, they get into the ring, there's a standoff. There's no fight. There's no physicality. The heels bailed. And Sting, you know, basically just, I guess he said hello to the crowd and he went to the back. So not an overly difficult night for Sting. But he's earned that. He's earned the right to just come out and look out into the crowd and not do anything else. The man is 62 years old. He doesn't need to be taking bumps every night. So look. How do I sum this up? The people were ecstatic to see the Hardys in action. The people got what they wanted in this match. The Hardys may be a little slower than they used to be, and they are, and it's very noticeable. It's been really noticeable with Matt for a while. And Matt's another one. He's had a lot of injuries, and he's got to be hurting. Jeff, too. Jeff is also slower. You know, look, they're in their 40s now. You know, a lot of us who have been fans for 20, 30 years, 30 plus years, I remember the Hardys when they were underage jobbers on WWE's syndicated shows. Legally, they shouldn't have even been allowed to be in the ring. They snuck in, they're fucking 14, maybe not 14, but they're like 15 years old doing jobs. You know, and it's funny, we talk about Scott Hall and all the tributes to him and everything because he passed away this week. And Scott Hall, you know, when he was Razor Ramon, he loved working with Jeff. He saw something in Jeff. And every time they had Jeff in, the Hardys would come in to do jobs on those shows at the tapings. He would want to work with Jeff because he saw something in him. I remember the Hardys when they would come in. I think it was Matt Hardy doing jobs for the Ringmaster back in 96. They've been around forever. Eventually, age and injuries and the wear and tear, it all catches up to you. So I don't expect the Hardys to go out there and be speedballing around the ring the way they used to. The fact that they could even get in the ring and wrestle is kind of a miracle when you consider the bumps in those TLC matches that they took. Or that fucking stupid bump that Matt took, the leg drop off the top of the cage in the match with Edge at Unforgiven, which really fucked up his lower body and his fucking pelvis and everything. So, yes, they're slower, they move around slower than they used to, but they were as over as they've ever been in front of this crowd in San Antonio. And, you know, it's a big pickup for AEW for their tag team division. If they can stay over like this for a while, you know, eventually maybe the bloom comes off the rose and it loses some of its novelty, but right now, they can be a real draw for this company. You know, they could draw tickets. If AEW maybe is struggling in a certain market to sell tickets to a Dynamite and they put the Hardys and they advertise the Hardys on the card, you know, it could be the difference between selling an extra 1,000, 2,000 tickets. You know, that's the kind of difference that Jeff Hardy, maybe not Matt, but Jeff and Matt together being on the card could make. That's why Tony Khan brought him in. Then we got to our main event. Steel cage match for the AEW Women's Championship. Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defending her title against Thunder Rosa in Rosa's hometown of San Antonio, Texas. Rosa got the live music treatment. They had a band playing before her entrance. And she came out. Was it a mariachi? I think it was a mariachi band. I think of Mariachi Brock. I still remember Mariachi Brock coming out with the sombrero and the rattle and doing the fucking... still makes me laugh. That was before his match with Eddie Guerrero. So she got a band playing for her before her entrance. They didn't play her music to the ring. But they played, and then out she came. Of course, hometown pop, big reaction for Thunder Rosa. Here she comes. And she comes out there. She's got a giant sombrero on her head. Her face is all done up. You know, a lot of times she's got half her face painted, kind of like Darby. And she had her whole face, like her war paint was on. And she was holding in her hand the flag of the Lone Star State. Great ovation. This thing had a big match feel to it here in this main event. Britt Baker came out. Britt Baker had some Scott Hall-inspired gear. I don't know if you noticed, but her gear was most definitely inspired by Scott Hall's old NWO gear in WCW. She was a big Scott Hall fan. In fact, she posted a picture on her Twitter that looked familiar to me when she put it up. It was a picture from a convention a few years ago. They had done a... they're always trying to come up with ideas for these conventions of, you know, photo ops and stuff. And one of them was you could take a picture on a ladder with Scott Hall holding the old Intercontinental title, right? Which is a pretty neat idea. And I was there, and I didn't, you know, pay to go up on the ladder with him. I'm kind of watching, and Britt Baker comes over. And she climbs the ladder, and so she's on the ladder on one side, Scott Hall's on the other side, holding the Intercontinental title, and they're just having a conversation, and I was snapping a whole bunch of pictures. And I had forgotten about it until she posted the picture, and I said, that picture looks awfully familiar. I said, I think I took that picture, and I think I have more of them. So I went back in my phone, and sure enough, it was from, I think, 2019. Actually, you know what? It might have been Vegas. I think it was Vegas, Double or Nothing in Vegas. That was the only AEW show I ever went to, and it was the first Double or Nothing. I'm almost positive it was Vegas, and so it was a really cool photo op. So yeah, I sent her another photo and all that. So she's clearly a big Scott Hall fan. So I thought that was very cool on short notice for her to put that together. But Rosa sent Baker into the side of the cage early. And after she did that, the camera cut away for about 20 or 25 seconds. And the camera stayed on Thunder Rosa. And when the camera would not change, I knew exactly what was going on. It was very clear that Britt was off trying to get some color. She was, you know, they were trying to give her some time to go ahead and get the blade job done. And when they went back to her, she didn't really, it didn't look like she really got a lot of color. And so Rosa started, you know, hammering away on the cut, trying to open it up and make it look better. She started raking her face like a cheese grater across the side of the cage. Britt gained the advantage. She worked Rosa over during the final picture-in-picture break. Rosa, during the break, I believe, Rosa was also open. I didn't see how it happened. I used that last break. I got up and went and did something and came right back. So when they came back, though, Rosa also was bleeding from the forehead. Britt had introduced a bunch of chairs into the ring. Rosa, though, was able to use them against her, and she went on the offensive. She hit a running basement drop kick in the corner. So they had a spot. That's right. Red equals green, as Tuxedo T Servo said in the chat. Indeed. Red does equal green. Don't know who was the first person to coin that phrase, but I'm sure it was probably some wrestler from the 60s or the 70s. And other people have co-opted it over the years. But it's true. Red does equal green, or at least it used to. But there was a spot where Britt Baker caught referee Paul Turner flush on the jaw with a super kick. Now, he did not go out like a light. He was kind of stunned, and he had his back turned. He was over by the ropes. Shout out to Jared M. with the Hardy Monster Super Chat. Very appropriate. Thank you, Jared. Look at that. That's what I would do if one of my fellow podcasters was ever in need and they were getting the shit kicked out of them. I would come out and I would dance first. Before I could help them, I've got to dance for all my fans. And then I would come down and help them. So Paul Turner got kicked in the face. And he's trying to stumble back up to his feet. And Rosa knocks Britt Baker into him. And that sends him through the ropes out to the floor. So now there's no referee. Referee is now out of the picture. He lands on the floor between the cage and the ring. So if I didn't mention that, this was more, I don't remember if the AEW cages have been like this before. I don't remember if this was the same cage, same type of cage that they used for Cody and Wardlow on Dynamite all that time ago. This was more like a Hell in a Cell. Tall cage. They've always had the tall cage, but there was a gap between the cage and the ring. So you had some space, you can go outside, you can go onto the ring. It's possible their cage matches have been that way before. I just don't remember. But in any event. So the referee is out on the floor. And Fire Thunder Driver by Thunder Rosa in the middle of the ring. That's her finishing move. And she goes for the pin, but there's no referee. There's no referee. She's getting the visual pin, but there is no ref. So Rosa goes up to the top rope. Britt, though, catches her with a chair shot across the back. And Britt starts setting up a pile of chairs on the ground. So we have a whole pile of chairs on the mat. She goes up on the ropes, and Britt Baker hits an avalanche air raid crash to Thunder Rosa down onto the pile of chairs. Still no referee. And Britt is looking to the back, and she is yelling for another referee to come out. Here comes Aubrey Edwards. And Aubrey Edwards comes running down to the ring. They open the door for her. She counts the fall, but Rosa kicks out at 2.5. So Britt gets up in Aubrey's face. Aubrey, though, she don't take shit from nobody in these matches, and she pushes her back. Britt perched Rosa up on the top rope and started setting up chairs in the corner, standing them up. 8 fucking chairs. She had 2 chairs and 2 chairs, and then she put a chair on top of them and another one and another one. 8 chairs is what she constructed in the corner of this ring. I am, just so you know, I'm dying here. I am under the weather. Hopefully I don't sound like it, but I'm leaking like a sieve here, so I apologize, but I'm gonna make it through. I promise I'm gonna make it through here. This is the best I've sounded all day, by the way. I wasn't even sure if I was gonna be able to do a review. I sounded like fucking garbage earlier, but had some hot tea, and I'm feeling a little bit better. But in any event, this show made me feel a little bit better. So she sets up 8 chairs in the corner, and they wound up fighting on the top rope, and Rosa grabs Britt by the face, and she slams her face first into the side of the cage, and Britt falls backwards, down onto the pile of chairs, and then she tumbles over and lands on the floor. Rosa then scurries down, tries for the cover, but Britt kicks out at two. So Baker retrieved a small black sack from under the ring. We've seen her do this before. Britt loves her black sacks. And she brings the sack into the ring. We already know what's inside. Jim, before she even takes the thumbtacks out and spreads them on the ground, Jim Ross is already talking about thumbtacks in the sack. And of course, she spreads them out, thousands and thousands of thumbtacks on the floor. Well, not really. Not really thousands and thousands, but a lot of thumbtacks, probably hundreds of thumbtacks on the floor. And Britt ends up backdropping Thunder Rosa into the tacks. She puts the glove on, only this time her glove is white to go with her white attire instead of the usual black glove. And she flips off the camera. And she goes to put her hand in Rosa's mouth, and Rosa bites down on Britt's hand. Then she takes Britt's hand, and she starts slamming it down repeatedly on the thumbtacks. And Rosa sets up Britt Baker, and she sets her for a powerbomb onto the thumbtacks. Baker rolls out to the floor, goes to grab another chair. She whacks Rosa over the head with its second chair shot to the head here on the show when Rosa came out after. They get back in the ring, and Rosa manages to get Britt Baker up for the Fire Thunder Driver, the second one of the match, but this time she hits the Fire Thunder Driver down onto the thumbtacks. Thunder Rosa gets the pin to become the new AEW Women's Champion for the first time in her career. She's in tears. Place is going nuts. Dustin Rhodes comes into the ring. And she hugs Dustin in this big emotional moment as they go off the air. I enjoyed this main event. I thought this main event was a lot of fun. It was certainly a lot more fun than the match they had at Revolution. That match was done to set up this match. That match honestly was really no good, I didn't think. But this match was very enjoyable. It had the payoff that people were hoping for. Unlike most of the time in WWE, when you're in a hometown, I guess, in AEW, usually things go well for you. Maybe not all the time, but I guess it didn't go too well for Punk in Chicago when he had that match with MJF back in February. But, if you know, again, when you're in the hometown, you're in the main event, and you get the special entrance, there's only one possible outcome. Can you imagine if Britt Baker would have just, you know, cheated and beat her again in the middle of the ring? That would have been the end of Thunder Rosa. That would have been it. Everything here was designed and set up for her to get the big pop in her hometown. And it got exactly the reaction they were hoping for. And kudos to both women. I thought they both did a hell of a job, you know, here in this main event, just like they did in their Lights Out match last year. A lot of people thought that Lights Out match was maybe the match of the year in AEW. I didn't think it was. It wasn't better than the best of the matches in AEW last year, but it was on the list. In fact, it might have been on my list now that I think about it. I think I had it on my top 15 matches, but the match tonight was very good. And Thunder Rosa gets a well-deserved win here in this match, and we'll see now if Britt has issues with Jamie Hayter. Again, I floated that before. I think that's probably where they're going to be headed next. Britt might have one more match with Thunder Rosa because she did beat her. Now Rosa beat her, and so she could argue, well, we need to have one more. I deserve a rematch. And that could be a double or nothing, or it could be on television at some point in the month of April. We'll see. A lot of time between now and double or nothing. They have a lot, because they only have four pay-per-views a year. Today's March 16th, so we still have another 6 weeks before we get to the next pay-per-view. So you know, a little programming note. There will be a SmackDown. I am planning a SmackDown review, although it may, honestly, it may depend on how I feel. But I am planning a SmackDown review for Friday night. There will be no Rampage review. If there is a SmackDown review, it will be SmackDown only. There will not be a Rampage review because Rampage is being delayed this week. It's going to be airing late because of NCAA basketball. So probably the earliest that Rampage is even going to air is 11:30 at night. And I ain't staying up to review Rampage at fucking 1 o'clock in the morning. So that ain't going to happen. It's not that important of a show that I'm going to stay up at the fucking ass crack of dawn to review Rampage on YouTube when I can do the same thing on the podcast on Sunday, if anything big happens. However, This is the lineup for those who are going to be watching Rampage. Darby Allin one-on-one against The Butcher. We've got legit Layla Hirsch against Red Velvet. Keith Lee against Max Caster. And Bear Country team up with Fuego del Sol to take on the House of Black. That is your Rampage lineup for Friday night. Now, normally at this point, I would throw it, before we get to your super chats, I would throw it to the Twitter poll. And I can't do that now because I updated the I updated OBS. And of course, I'm not one to usually update things right away when there's an update that gets pushed out. If iOS pushes out an update, you know, I let all the idiots who are going to get all the bugs and stuff do it first. And once I know it's safe, then I'll update. So I made a mistake and I updated OBS and it fucked everything up. So now, it, for whatever reason, it's not showing the poll. So I put a poll up in the live chat. And let's see where we are. We have over 800 votes in so far. 93% thumbs up. 7% thumbs down. Now, I did get a Twitter poll up. I will look at it and see how it compares. On Twitter right now, we have over 1,000 votes in on Twitter at Solomon. So you can go vote right now. It's actually pretty close. 91.3% thumbs up to 8.7% thumbs down. So almost identical. How about that? Wow. Almost identical. So an overwhelmingly positive response for Dynamite tonight. I thought it was a good episode. It was not one of their better episodes, but the main event, I thought the main event was very good. I did enjoy the main event. I did enjoy the Danielson-Moxley stuff, especially the post-match stuff. But, you know, on the whole, I would call it a good show, not a great show tonight. But then again, I guess I would be wrong based on the poll result. Everybody seems to think that tonight was an outstanding show. You are certainly entitled to that opinion. All righty. Now we get to your messages and your comments. I'll talk amongst yourselves here in the chat. Yeah, don't mind me. I'll just be background noise here. Hashway, thank you for the $5. He says, "Hey yo, I was always scared from the bad guy more than the Undertaker when I was a child. Always listening to the reviews, even when I am not in the chat. You were afraid of the bad guy. Why were you afraid of the bad guy?" What was so scary about Razor Ramon? Tuxedo T Servo, rest in peace to Scott Hall. Had to show a friend those original vignettes they did for him, along with the ones for Mr. Perfect. Some of WWF's best stuff. Yeah, the Ramon vignettes were actually quite funny, even at the time. You go back now and you watch them, and the Mr. Perfect vignettes, though, those are the best. Those are the best they ever did for anybody. Mr. Perfect playing bowling. Mr. Perfect playing, I think he did horseshoes at one point. Of course, the basketball and the football. He did baseball, too. But the basketball and the football ones were the easiest. Those were easily the best. The football one where he throws the football from one end of the field and goes and catches his own pass. That will never be topped. And now both of them are gone. Both men are gone. Food Hive. I'm calling it Wardlow wins, Max takes the title. Wardlow wins. What? Was that? I don't know if that was sent in before his match tonight. If it was, then boy, do you look dumb. But I love you anyway, Food Hive. He says, it's good to be back on the streams. It's good to have you. I don't know why that popped up twice. It says, I'm proud of the work AEW has done with the women. Anti-M Bishop 07, $10 super chat. Thank you, brother. He says, planning on being at Dynamite on May 18th. CV took it from me twice. Not this time. Oh, COVID. As for the show tonight, Scott Hall would have loved it. Enough said. All the best. Well, he definitely would have loved Britt Baker's gear. Temjin Zephyr with the $19.99 super chat. Thank you, Temjin. He says, wonderful and emotional moment for Thunder Rosa. Congrats to her. Here is my question. Since you predict MJF to take the championship from Punk, will Wardlow be the one to take it from MJF a la Batista Triple H in 2005? It's too early to make that prediction. I mean, that is so far down the road. I think he could. He would have to stay over. He would have, you know, I mean, again, we're probably talking at least a year and a half into the future. So it's impossible to say. Joseph Brooks, this still would have been disappointing, but do you think WWE should have let Sting win the title in the match with Rollins, and then he could have vacated it the next night and say it was due to injury? No, I don't think that was necessary. I don't think that was necessary. I think that where WWE dropped the ball was not booking Sting against The Undertaker at the one WrestleMania that they had the chance to do it. Unless Undertaker was adamantly against it for some reason, there was no reason not to do that match. No reason at all not to do that match. That's where they fucked up. Joseph Brooks with the $9.99. This still would have been... Oh, I already read that. Thank you, Joseph. I told you, I don't feel well, so... I'm a little delirious right now. Nick Grosso, $9.99 Super Chat. Rest in peace to the founding father of the NWO and the true bad guy of wrestling. Bad times don't last, but bad guys do. Joseph. Yet again, $4.99. Buy or sell on who had the worst... The worst wheat? That literally says wheat, right? I am reading that correctly. Like Wheaties. The worst wheat during these moments. John Cena at One Night Stand 2006. Or Roman Reigns the night after Raw, after he defeated the worst wheat. I'm trying to figure out what he is saying when he writes that word. That's fucking hilarious. Now I'm picturing them as like fucking farmers and stuff. Who had the worst wheat? Roman got a lot of booze on Raw. I was there. I was definitely a mania. I would have been at Raw then. He got booed out of the fucking building. They wouldn't even let him speak. That was pretty bad. But John Cena walking into the Lion's Den at the Hammerstein Ballroom and people throwing the shirt back and people cussing him and flipping him off. That's heat. Oh, heat. Okay, so that's the word he was looking for. There we go. I figured it out. Worst heat. I prefer worst wheat. To me, that's funnier. That's funnier to me. Worst wheat is funnier. Brian Becerra with the $20 super chat. Great time tonight here for Dynamite, getting ready for the start of Rampage. He sent that about an hour ago, so Rampage is over by now. But Brian, I'm glad you had a good time. It looked like a fun show to be at. The crowd was hot for most of the night. Well, you know, hey, Bully Ray can talk about his heat, and I'll talk about my wheat. Yes, Austin in the chat says, you know who doesn't have the worst wheat? Magic Spoon, only made with high-quality wheat. Don't forget, magicspoon.com/Solomonster. $5 off. You want to help out the podcast, there you go. James Cooper, $9.99. What a show. Wish this was the crowd for Revolution. Did you see CM Punk's comments about Bret Hart on the media scrum? And if so, what are your thoughts? I did, and I already commented on it on the podcast. So if you want to hear my comments, check out episode 747. I get into detail about it on there from this past Sunday. Linklex 7, got to give AEW credit. Their cage matches actually do keep outside interference. They did, actually. That's a good point. There wasn't even an attempt by Jamie Hayter or Rebel to get involved tonight. That's what the cage is for. It's to keep people out. And it did its job tonight. Food Hive, so Bret Hart is definitely coming in, right? Nothing is definite. Nothing is definite until we actually see him in the flesh. Just like it's not definite that Cody is going to be at WrestleMania. I like all these people, by the way, who got very upset that Cody Rhodes was not on Raw Monday night. They blamed the dirt sheets. Oh, Meltzer and all of them and Sean Ross Sapp. And, you know, they said he was going to be there. No, they didn't. Point to me where they said he was going to be there. You thought he was going to be there. You set yourself up for disappointment. That's not WWE's fault. That's not Sean Ross Sapp's fault. That's not Dave Meltzer's fault. WWE never advertised Cody. They're teasing him. They're dropping little teases, but nobody ever said Cody was going to be there. I love how upset people got this week. Kiara Santiago, $5 super chat. Thank you, Kiara. Now that Thunder Rosa is champion, who do you see taking the title from? Boy, we're already booking her title loss. The woman has not even had a full 2 hours as champion, and we are already booking her loss. Also, as good as tonight's match was, nothing will top the unsanctioned match. Who do I see beating Thunder Rosa? I honestly don't know. I haven't really thought about who should be the one or who might be the one to take the title from her. Ruby Soho has disappeared off the face of the earth. I like what Serena Deeb is doing, but I don't know that they want to take the title off Thunder Rosa and put it on Serena, though. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you because I need to take a look at the women's roster and see who's active right now, and then I can probably figure it out at that point. You know, I might say Jade, but Jade already has the TBS title. I don't see her dropping that anytime soon. I still think that Ember Moon will end up in AEW. Athena. But I actually think there's a chance if she debuts, she goes after Jade and not the main title right away. Jacob Donnelly, $10 super chat. Thank you, Jacob. To see Thunder Rosa's transformation from Cobra Moon in Lucha Underground is insane. She's one of the best wrestlers in the world today and very happy to see her get her big moment. I agree. There's one of our new super chats, by the way. That orange imposter. Thank you, Texas Fight. We'll get to your message here in just a little bit. Yeah, it is pretty crazy. I used to watch her on Lucha Underground just like you did. And this is definitely a different side of her that we didn't get to see on Lucha Underground. The artist formerly known as Natural Born Thriller sent a $5 super chat. So sad for this week in the world of professional wrestling. Say rest in peace to the bad guy. We will miss him for life. Rodimus Prime, $25 super chat. What is going on, Rodimus? I think I just answered an email from you. I put it in for the notes for this week's podcast, I believe. But Rodimus, thank you. First off, he says, rest in peace to Scott Hall, the coolest bad guy ever. And second, I enjoyed the show except the Jericho segment. That was trash. Not a fan of the Jericho segment, I see. Joseph Brooks, why was Rey Mysterio booed at both ECW shows? I thought he was in ECW years ago. As I recall, I think it had more to do with him coming out, I think, to his WWE music. Yeah, it was almost like it was the WWE version of Rey. And the fans are fickle. So that would explain why also. Rey didn't do anything wrong. Casey is Raw. What's going on, Casey? $5 super chat. Says, my 40th birthday is on Friday. I'm getting old. At least I feel young in heart. Well, hey, the Hardys are older than you. And look at them out there tonight doing dives and swanton bombs and stuff. So if they can do that, that could be you one day. 40 is the new 30. You're not an old man. But if I don't get a chance to say it on Friday, happy birthday, Casey. Pro Wrestling and Video Game Fan 486. Congrats to Rosa. That main event was a banger. Link Lex 7. $4.99. Jericho's new gimmick reminded me a bit of Sports Entertainment Extreme, SEX, back from the early TNA days. Just no Russo, please. Yeah, no, we definitely don't need that. Be calm, see clearly. $5 super chat. I like the show. Rest in peace, Scott. Off topic, what's your favorite Ed Sheeran song? And yes, you have to name one. Stay safe, brother soul. Bad habits. Lord Frieza, $4.99 super chat. Haven't been on the stream in a couple of weeks. I got two ass contusions. Ah, fuck, I hate when that happens. I just talked about this on Sunday. WWE loves their contusions. It's the easiest way to explain somebody's absence from television. You don't want to break their arm or break their leg, right? Because that would put them off TV for months. So you just give somebody a contusion. AJ Styles, he's had a neck contusion the last 2 weeks, right? Remember when Triple H got dropped at that Survivor Series pay-per-view? Austin elevated him 50 feet up in a car and dropped him. I think Triple H missed 1 week of television, and they said he missed it with contusions. So I said the other day, I mean, you could just explain things away by putting contusions pretty much anywhere on the body. You can have neck contusions, you can have arm contusions, you could have ass contusions. And poor Lord Frieza here has ended up with two ass contusions, one for each cheek. You hate to see it. It says, happy to see Rosa as champion, a feel-good moment. Well, I hope your ass feels good. Ted Evans, $5 super chat. Don't get me wrong, I love what AEW is doing, but I can predict pretty much every match. Hey, I went 12-0 in my predictions at the pay-per-view, and I still thought it was a great show. Which just goes to show you that predictable doesn't always mean bad. Thoughts on what Tony Khan can do to make the show less predictable? Well, again, I don't know that he has to worry too much about that right now. It's good to throw a curveball every now and then. You don't want everything to be predictable, but again, predictable does not mean bad if it plays out on television in a way that makes sense and that's exciting and you're telling a story. Predictable does not have to mean bad, you know? The thing, like when Russo used to book television, you know, and back then it was very exciting because it was just such a departure from what we were used to seeing every week on TV. Every week was something different. It made the shows must-see in a way that they never were before. But then he just went overboard with it. And that's why the Russo swerve became like a fucking meme, because everything had to be a swerve. Everything had to shock people. Everything does not have to shock people. If you shock people once or twice, that's enough. When you shock people all the time, all of a sudden it loses its shock value. And that's what happened. And that's why I think as much fun as that era was of Crash TV, as great as it was, I think it really fucked wrestling forever. Or at least for the next 20 or 30 years until we kind of die off as fans. Because we can never go back to the way it was. And it almost ruined the experience for us now. You know, a lot of us are still watching these weekly shows, as bad as they can be, you know, on Mondays especially. We still watch them, I think, through the lens of what we saw in the late 90s and the early 2000s, and it's not like that anymore. You know, we like to think that maybe it will be one day, but it's not like that anymore. So a lot of people, I think, still watch the shows and keep up with the shows, hoping that they'll see something like what it used to be, but, you know, it can't be. It's not what the shows are now. It's almost like it ruined the experience for so many people. But that's what happens when you hotshot everything. That's kind of the downside to it. D. James, $5 super chat. Since we got a nice match with Britt and Rosa, I fully expect Vince gives us Bianca versus Doudrop. 2 out of 3 falls on Monday. If I have to see another fucking Bianca Belair Doudrop match. And I say that as somebody who praised their earlier matches, and I liked it, and it was very impressive watching Bianca pick her up for the KOD. And it's like beating a dead fucking horse. They just keep going back to it over and over and over and over and over and over again. I don't ever want to see the match again. That's what they do. They take something enjoyable and they beat it to death. Shin Akuma. The Solo Monster is the man. Been a fan since TV Tracks in 2014. I always wanted to do the Super Chat. Sending my love from Cali. Well, Shin, thank you very much. And I say Shin. I have Michael Cole's voice in my head talking about Nakamura. He calls him Shin all the time. But Shin, thank you. I appreciate the $20. Devin from NJ2000, $5 super chat. What would happen if Stephanie ever tried to slap the Sala monster? Well, let her try and find out. Stephanie would have a hell of a lawsuit. I would own part of WWE. JM, the $200 bomb. My God, it feels like so long ago. Was it really 59 minutes ago? I guess it was. Thank you again, JM. I was so good I will read it twice. He says, hey, yo, that was some good, wholesome, gory self-mutilation. Love the finish with the uncharacteristically legal counters by Rosa to the lockjaw. Survey says, one more for the good gals. Thank you, JM, again. That was very generous of you. David Wilson, $10 super chat. Outside of Mox and Danielson, someone else has a pass with Regal from early NXT. I thought you were going to say a certain Samoan. He says Cesaro, who I feel would fit perfectly with them. I can see it happening, especially with the Trios titles down the line. Well, I certainly would not mind seeing that. I actually do think, depending on what Tony Khan has planned for Ring of Honor, I think Cesaro could be one of the centerpieces. I almost, if he was interested, would save him for that. He could make crossover appearances in AEW as well, but part of me just thinks, like, you know, building around him as one of the headline guys in a revamped Ring of Honor, which is going to need some names. If he's going to run it as a separate promotion and run shows and sell tickets or try to get a TV show, he needs names. That's where a Cesaro or a Samoa Joe, and there's no doubt in my mind, Samoa Joe is going to AEW. It's just a matter of when. I would consider using them to help relaunch a new Ring of Honor if that's what Tony Khan wants to do. You can't relaunch it just, you know, around a bunch of names that haven't been established yet. You've got to have some star power behind. Dry chicken without flavor, rest in peace to Scott Hall. He made wrestling feel cool. Lone Wolf. You mean to tell me that Jericho swapped Santana and Ortiz for Squarehead and Pinhead? That's exactly what he did. And he swapped Daniel Garcia or Sammy Guevara for Daniel Garcia. I said it's basically just like a new 2.0. Inner Circle 2.0. You could have called them Inner Circle 2.0 because you had a tag team literally called 2.0, although now they're no longer 2.0. Mr. Robert in the chat says, Sala Monster be asking Stephanie to give him a face contusion. Yes, Stephanie, if Stephanie wants to give me a face contusion, then I will give her my address and I will leave the door unlocked. And she can come over and she can give me the face contusion. Austin, $5 super chat. It's called Jericho Appreciation Society because Sports Entertainment Extreme was already taken. Food Hive, Kevin Owens sent Cody to the Bucks and 2.0 to Y2J. And Dry Chicken says Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker equals effing masterpiece. Shin Akuma coming in hot with another $20 super chat. My AEW comes on at 8, but I wanted to join my first super chat. Actually, that's your second super chat. Shin, thank you. Welcome to the streams. Frankie Rodriguez, $9.99. Simpo Monster. You call me Simpo Monster? Like you wouldn't say the same thing. Shut the fuck. Frankie Rodriguez, love your podcast, been listening for years, and nobody is close, not even Joe Rogan. Honestly, wow, I wish I was getting Joe Rogan money. Anyways, what's your top five Hall and Oates songs? Oh, well, I'm not going to rank them, but I can give you five. Out of Touch is my all-time favorite. Family Man, Say It Isn't So. Man Eater, And what am I missing? Adult education. Adult education. That would actually be pretty high up on the list. So there you go. Those are my five. Sarah Smile is actually not one of my favorites. I don't know why everybody talks about Sarah Smile. I'm not a fan of Sarah Smile. King Bling Blah, buy or sell, Broken Hardys in AEW in the future. Yeah, I mean, I think down the road, there's interest, maybe some money if they can merchandise it. I think you can go back to the broken stuff one last time as like a, you know, like a novelty, nostalgia kind of thing. But that's down the road. Right now, you gotta milk this old school Hardy Boys thing, you know, for a while. I would stay away from the broken stuff. Because at some point, I'm sure Jeff's going to want to get cute. He's going to want to, you know, go Itchweed or, you know, Willow. He's going to want to do Willow. You know Tony Khan is going to let Jeff Hardy do Willow at some point. But right now, I think old school Hardys is the way to go. Shin Akuma. Look at this. If Triple H was not hurt, would he be the one challenging Austin at King of the Ring or SummerSlam? Austin is not wrestling. So Austin isn't wrestling at WrestleMania, let alone SummerSlam. So no. Now Triple H is done. Spanish Goddess, $4.99. Man, I'm happy I got to meet Hall last year at Stockton Con. He signed my encyclopedia as both Hall and Razor. Well, that's very cool. That is very cool. And Brad in the chat, thank you. That means a lot. Thank you. I deserve Joe money. I thought that said Joe mama for a second. I must be semi-delusional. Flamethrower, Fluff Salisbury, $5 super chat. Is Jeff Hardy's dance the Jeff Jiggle or the Jeff Jubilee? It was kind of like the Jeff Joust. I don't know. I kind of like the Jeff Jiggle. Sounds like he's like 350 pounds. Jeff will eventually get to an age where there will definitely be things jiggling on his body, but he's not that old yet. Jared M, $25 super chat. Proud Bret Hart mark since WrestleMania 4. He should have won that battle royal. I agree. Fucking Bad News Brown. I agree. Damien, do you feel like AEW overuses blood and thumbtacks? Yes. Yes. I think they do use it a little too much. Don, well, I would save it for special occasions like tonight. Tonight made sense because they did the same thing a year ago in their Lights Out match. But they definitely, certainly on the blood. But, you know, I'm not a big fan of the thumbtacks anyway. I mean, that's just me. I would be perfectly fine saving the thumbtacks for like once or twice a year. And I'm cool with blood in certain situations. I think it can enhance the match, but they do it too often. I agree. Don Juan, don't worry about how you sound. Still sound hot. Well, I don't know about that, but thank you. Juan Ocampo, condolences to Uthman. Love you, buddy. Prayers. Oh, I must have missed something. Is everything okay? I don't know what that is in reference to. Yes, by the way, I forgot to point out, tonight is an NWO. I mean, it's, you know, reversed, obviously, but tonight just felt like an NWO kind of night. So I got the NWO shirt on tonight. Lone Wolf, $5 super chat. Hey, yo, got a buy, sell, or rent survey for you. Mariachi Brock, Boombox Brock, or Farmer Brock? Mariachi Brock is definitely number one. I would go Boombox Brock number two and Farmer Brock number three. Although I do enjoy all three, but I would do it in that order. Uffman, I'm very sorry to hear that. He lost his dad tonight, so I'm very, very sorry to hear that. I don't know the circumstances around it, but it doesn't matter. It's a shitty thing. I've been there myself, so I'm sorry to hear that. Condolences to you and the family. Amiibo, let's effing go, he says. Thunder Rosa, viva Mexico. Oh, Amiibo, big Thunder Rosa fan here. Man, I'm dying here. Black High 710 with a $9.99 super chat. No message, just showing some support and love for the stream. I appreciate that. Groovy Goose, hope you get feeling better. I hope so, too. Mets bullpen is stacked, by the way. MJF is the ultimate heel. By losing to Jericho, we still have to deal with him. Stay well. Thank you, Groovy Goose. Darth Panic, $15 super chat. Due to the severity of his injury, do you think WWE will force Big E to retire? Scott Hall, he says, was just too sweet. No, I don't think they're going to force him to retire. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how he heals from the injury. I saw there was an article by someone who used to be a doctor for WWE who wrote about the kind of injury that Big E has, and he specifically talked about the fracture to the C1, which could be life-threatening. He's very lucky it wasn't worse. But he said the nature of that type of fracture is such that it could prevent him from ever being able to wrestle again. And I'm sure that's not something Big E wants to hear. And look, this doctor did not specifically see Big E, although he is a doctor and he used to work for WWE. That was his opinion. Big E is back home. He's out of the hospital. That's very good to hear. But we don't know. We don't know when or if Big E will be able to come back to the ring. I think people are just assuming, okay, people break their necks sometimes. He may be out for many months, but he'll come back. There's always the possibility that he can't. But I don't think WWE is going to force him into retirement unless for some reason he's not healing properly from his injury. I think that's what the doctor in his article was saying, is that that type of fracture, a lot of times, you know, when it heals, it doesn't heal quite the right way. And so that was what he was referring to when he said that Big E could potentially see the end of his career. I certainly hope that doesn't happen. I hope he's able to come back. That would be a terrible way for his career to come to an end. I mean, the silver lining in it, I guess, is that at least he got to win the WWE Championship, for whatever that's worth. I mean, not like they pushed him like it, but I don't think anybody is hoping, you know, for this to be the end. I mean, the guy just got hurt. He just broke his neck. I think we should all just calm down and let the man heal, and hopefully he'll be able to heal and make his way back. If it takes a year, if it takes 18 months, so be it. I think we all just want him to heal up and get better. That's the most important thing. Black High 710, thank you for the $9.99. Both nights of WrestleMania look extremely underwhelming. Would be really surprised if either night is better than Revolution. Double donation for the great Solomon Monster. Well, I appreciate that, Black. Thank you very much. Where are we, by the way? I forgot to mention the likes. A little over 300. We can get that up. Hit that like button if you haven't already done so. No reason we can't at least hit 350. We had like well over 1,000. It's always comical to me. We get so many people in here. And I look, it's like 200 likes, 300 likes. Then we get sad Solomon Monster. Then you'll see the disappointed Solomon Monster donation pop up. Why don't they like me? EJ Slamp, if Eddie was still alive, I think he would probably be a manager. Who do you think Eddie would have had the most chemistry with? Andrade, Escobar, or Garza? I kind of feel like Garza. I don't know. I kind of feel like Los Lotharios. I feel like he could have done something with that. Eddie's another one. Another one. Gone too soon. Marcus, I think you're right. A lot of people, they do wait. It's not even until the end. They wait like the next day and stuff. A lot of these end up hitting 1,000 likes and stuff, but I laugh at it. It's just comical to me. We'll have like 1,500 people like in the live chat. I think they're just kind of focused on me. They're focused on the review, or maybe they're watching on TV or something. And I don't know. It's kind of funny to me, but anyway. Texas Fight 210. San Antonio was loud. Hope it came across that way on TV. It did. It did. You guys did well. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of Texas tonight. Dry chicken without flavor. Should William Regal actually recruit Serena Deeb? Interesting idea. I don't think they need to do that right now. So I'm going to say no, but it's an interesting idea. Nick Grosso, Charmel going into the Hall of Fame. He does not approve of Charmel going into the Hall of Fame. Shaquille Oatmeal, $4.99 Super Chat. When you eventually play WWE 2K, will you be playing the My Rise game mode? Also, what's your favorite of all time Bret Hart match? Love your content, brother. Well, Mr. Oatmeal, I appreciate that. Low key, it's funny because it's true. I am going to probably do the My Rise mode. Maybe we'll make it episodic, or yeah, you might get some gameplays that are just random. Also, me picking wrestlers and doing random stipulation matches. Again, I haven't played any WWE 2K since 2K16. So this is, it's, you know, all going to be new to me again. I'm probably not going to be very good. So I'm trying to practice. I'm using a Nintendo Pro controller here wirelessly to the laptop, and that works. But, you know, I still don't know how to pin. I'm having trouble with pinning. And once I get to the top of the ladder, I just stand there like a moron, kind of like they do on TV in real life, instead of reaching up and figuring out how to pull something down. So I don't know if the Pro controller has its own controls. I have to figure all that out. But yeah, I'm hoping I can record some stuff and get the first video up maybe next week. We'll see. But favorite of all time Bret Hart match, my God. I mean, that's like me having octuplets and you're asking me to pick my favorite child. Well, I gotta say, I am very partial. I am a very big fan of the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect match from the King of the Ring, their second match. The King of the Ring 93. I love that whole pay-per-view. That's my favorite of all time pay-per-view. So I might actually go with that match. I might go with Bret and Perfect from King of the Ring in 93. I might just go with that. But I also love Bret and Owen in the cage from SummerSlam 94. So I'm kind of conflicted. I don't know. I'm going to say Bret and Perfect from King of the Ring 93. Might be my all-time favorite Bret match. Pro wrestling and video game fan 486. Should Hangman lose the AEW World title at Double or Nothing? That's a tough one. That's a tough one. Because it does feel like it would be too soon. But I also wouldn't be totally against it. He won the title in November. If he loses it in May, that's a pretty respectable run. I guess maybe it depends who he drops it to. You know, my idea was to drop it to Punk. Punk eventually drops it to MJF. Because I don't see him losing it to Adam Cole, even though they're going to have a rematch. You know what? If he rematches with Cole at Double or Nothing, if they wait, do it there. I don't see him losing it there, so then he would lose it at All Out. But I do think if not Double or Nothing, then by All Out, I think he drops it. So, I wouldn't be against it. Samoan Fan 101. Look, not everybody is going to have a year with the championship. If you have 7 or 8 months, that's okay too. You know, and he could always win it back at some point. Samoan Fan 101 says JM drops bombs, Vince McMahon drops bongs. I think if you put a bong in Vince McMahon's hand, I don't think he would know what to do with it. I think he would probably take it into the bathroom and say, up to what line do you want me to fill it? Like, he wouldn't know what to do with it. NWO Elite. Dig that shirt, bruh. Thank you, sir. Scott Hall always had the best looking punches. Who had your favorite work punch? It's funny you mentioned that. I'm going to talk about that on the podcast. You're stealing some of my thunder for Sunday. I jotted down 3 or 4 names of the people who I think have the best work punch. There is one person who has the best punch. It wasn't Scott Hall, but Scott Hall is absolutely on my list. He's in my top three of who I think had the best work punches in wrestling. His punches looked fucking great. Believable. Made a good sound. Dr. Scorpio. I enjoyed the blood and... Oh, boy. It keeps getting knocked down. I enjoyed the blood and guts in a Cell main event. Haha. Enjoyed tonight's show and rest in peace, Scott Hall. Glad we got to see him get inducted into the Hall of Fame in person. Shame Vader did not get that chance. Yeah, that is a shame, isn't it? That is a real fucking shame. I will never forgive Vince McMahon for waiting and waiting and waiting and not putting Randy Savage in the Hall of Fame when he was still alive, because that would have been an amazing speech. I will never forgive him for that. Big Steak McGee just subscribed. What kind of steak? We talking filet mignon? We talking London broil? We talking New York strip? What are we talking about here? Oscar V. Does Austin get booed at Mania X8 against Hogan? Yes. I've thought about this before. I think anybody in the ring with Hogan in Toronto at X8 is getting booed. Maybe Austin knew that. Maybe Austin was smart enough. Maybe that's why he said no and he didn't want to work with Hogan. He didn't want to go in there and get booed. But yeah, I think he would have gotten booed just like The Rock did. And Rowdy JJ with the $10 super chat. Glad I was there live to see Thunder Rosa win and keep up the great work, Solomon. Thank you, Rowdy JJ. Mad King 1984, $4.99. Sorry, I might have already missed this already, but how would you book Rosa's title reign? I haven't even thought about that. I don't want to get into fantasy booking the next 6 or 8 months. I would let her, have her time with it. I wouldn't even consider taking that championship off of her until maybe All Out. Maybe, you know, at the earliest. You know, we've had almost a full year of a heel Britt Baker as champion. I think we need some time now with babyface Thunder Rosa. Look, we've had Britt Baker as the heel champion. We have Jade Cargill as the heel TBS champion. You got to give the babyface some time, I think, with the title. Paul Heyman with the Super Chat. $5 Super Chat. Did anyone tell you that last Friday at the Hog Show, you looked like a giant blue M&M? No, but you just did. Thank you, Paul Heyman. JM is not done yet. Look at this guy. Look at this crazy guy. $35 super chat from JM, the Christian LASIK surgery. He's looking for his peeps. He can't find him. JM, since calling yourself a sports entertainer is instant heel heat in AEW, which woman, currently under contract or not, could you see joining Jericho Appreciation Society to strengthen the female heel roster? Get well soon, brother. Well, based on the vignette they showed tonight, it looks like Chris Statlander is dropping her alien gimmick, right? She's no longer an alien from outer space. Maybe she breaks away from Best Friends and... I don't know. I don't get the sense they're bringing a female into the group, so I haven't really thought about it. You're putting me on the spot with questions I haven't even given any thought to. And I'm not even sure what the entirety is of the official AEW women's roster. Where's Riho? Like, people come and go. I'm not sure who's full-time or who's not anymore. Sheeta just came back. I don't know. I don't know, honestly. It wouldn't be Serena Deeb, though. I know that. It would not be Serena Deeb. EJ Slamp, is Rey the greatest luchador of all time? He is in my book. I say yes. Think about how he revolutionized the business. Everybody who looks to him and refers to him as their inspiration, and they've been watching him since they were a kid, or they made them a wrestling fan, and you know what he did for smaller wrestlers, showing that they can get over and be something and be a champion on American television. Gotta be Ray. Dry chicken without flavor. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. It is officially March 17th, so if you are, if you are the Fightin' Irish, happy St. Paddy's Day. Have a pint on me. and Shin Akuma dropping $5 more. He might have the last word here. 2002 to 2005 for me is like your love for the golden era. I love that period so much. I don't blame you. That was a great period too. 2002 and 2003 SmackDown is some of the best television that WWE has ever done, with one of their strongest rosters. That's when SmackDown was the A show, the SmackDown 6 and all that. And they had legends and names like Hogan and Hollywood Rock and Undertaker, but they had the young guns too. Then Kurt Angle, Benoit, but they had a lot of young talent as well on the rise. Edge, among others. Of course, he had the Los Guerreros as well. Rey Mysterio was on the show. Yeah, that was a great era. That was definitely a great era of SmackDown. John Cena, Doctor of Thuganomics, coming into his own and getting over. World's greatest tag team, Haas and Benjamin. They had Carlito when he first debuted on SmackDown. Lakers, Pats 1, buy or sell Brett versus Vince, WrestleMania 26. Or Brett against Backlund at WrestleMania 11. Oh, my goodness. That's one of the worst Bret Hart matches of all time. Brett and Vince is I'm going to buy on that. I mean, that was worse. For Brett against Backlund at WrestleMania, that was awful. That was just a terrible, terrible match. Even Brett in his book, I think, shit all over it. Yeah, it was bad. It was pretty bad. Man. So, I think that covers all the super chats, unless we have a few more that come in. But you guys really brought your A game tonight. Again, I haven't felt good all day, so that made me feel good, although I still don't feel great. But we're not done yet. You know why? Because it's that time. It's time to be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Ah, yes, it is time to be the Booker. We are getting very close. We are getting very, very close. Having a full tournament bracket on the men's side and the women's side, which I will then put together. I've been recording all of the matches that I have been randomly selecting. They will go into our own little March Madness bracket of sorts. At which point I will allow you guys to begin voting. We got a few more left to go. So, without any further ado, we're going to start with the ladies this time. Change it up a little bit. Let's start with the ladies and see who we pick first as we try to book a decent main event level match. Remember, that's the whole point here. We're trying to book main events. And we have Saray. We have the new version of Saray from NXT. Wait, is she supposed to be like Sailor Moon or something? Right? Isn't it? Is it Sailor Moon or some other anime character that she's based after? Andre in the chat says Solomon Monster against the flu. Yeah, let's hope not. Anyway, Saray. All right, well, let's see who Saray is going to be facing. It'll be Saray one-on-one against Betty White. Oh, my God. I can't with these matches. Jesus. Serenity now. Saray against Betty fucking White. What a match that would be. Holy shit. Where do you even go from here? Where? I love Betty White. That's why I put her in there. She was one of the better Raw guest hosts they ever had. So I felt it was only appropriate to put her in there. But holy crap. Well, let's switch over to the men. We go from Saray and Betty White. I can only imagine what we're going to book here. Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who in this particular photo is snacking on the ring rope. This was Vince at his tannest and at his most swole. I think this was Vince from, 2006, I think? This is when he was on the cover of Muscle and Fitness. Vince McMahon. I just shit all over the idea of Vince McMahon wrestling a WrestleMania this year, which thankfully he isn't. And then I book Vince McMahon in the main event here of one of these matches. Well, let's see. Who's Vince McMahon going to be getting in? I swear to God, if Austin Theory, or not Austin Theory, if Pat McAfee comes up, I'm leaving. I'm walking right out of here if Pat McAfee comes up. It'll be Vince McMahon one-on-one. Oh. Gotta be kidding me. Oh, it was meant to be. It was meant to be. How random is this thing, I wonder? Vince McMahon against Austin Theory. Well, we got ourselves a McMahon against Austin. Austin against McMahon. We just booked ourselves an Austin versus McMahon main event. Yeah, what are the chances? I have over 200 names, 200 faces in this thing. We land on Vince McMahon and Austin Theory. You tell me that that's not meant to be. Anyway, that concludes this installment of Be the Booker. This is going to be quite the bracket. When I put this thing, I got to figure out what order the matches are going to be in and everything. This is going to be quite the bracket when I put this thing together. Holy shit. Wow. Andre says, still better booking than WWE. I don't know about that. This will win. Christian Cruz says that match is going to win the entire tournament. It could. I'm going to put the decision in your hands. You guys are going to vote. I'm going to put the polls up on probably on YouTube. And, oh, I forgot the buzzer. That's right. Samoan fan, that's right. I forgot the buzzer. Well, that's okay. I have another buzzer here. I like that one more. There's your buzzer. Let's see. We got some more super chats here before we get out of here. Samoan fan 101, did Monday Night Raw give you herpes or something? What the fuck? I'll have you know, I have never had a sexually transmitted disease, because I actually take care of myself. I get my shots, and I don't hang out with the same women that apparently you hang out with. So, there you go. And Shin Akuma. $5 super chat. I heard the reason why Brock Lesnar destroyed Zach Gowen in front of his mother was because he would smoke in the back. Oh, I never heard that. I don't know if that's the case or not, but they were always doing stuff like that to people. If you pissed somebody off in the back, or you did something that you weren't supposed to be doing, you know, sometimes they would potentially take it out on you on television. I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that. Oh boy. You guys in the chat is something else. Mr. Dynamite says Brock doesn't like smokers. Brock strikes me as more of a dipper than a smoker, if I had to take a guess. That's right. Miz once ate a piece of chicken in the lot. But the thing is, he ate a piece of chicken over somebody's bag. I think it was one of the referees. That's what got him here. I think it was Benoit who kicked him out, put him in the hallway. It's one thing to eat chicken in the locker room. It's another thing to eat chicken over somebody's bag. Ricky Edmond coming in with a $10 late super chat. The Russo on a pole, bro. Super chat. Five Mount Rushmores of the new generation era wrestlers. Well, I mean, if you're talking about WWF New Generation, 94, 95, Bret and Shawn, obviously. They were the leaders of that New Generation era. Bret, Shawn, Undertaker. It's tough because I want to put Diesel and Razor on there. Well, actually, that would be five, right? You gave me the leeway to have five. So there you go. Bret, Shawn, Undertaker, Diesel, and Razor. Those five were the faces of the New Generation era. Dried chicken without flavor, $5 super chat. Tonight's Dynamite was like having a delicious 24 pieces of barbecue chicken wings. 24 pieces? That's a lot of chicken wings. Hey, Scott, what's going on? Happy day to you, too. He's been a channel member for 12... Holy shit, it's a year. You know what? You just reminded me of something. I want to thank everybody who is a channel member here on the... I was hoping to do some more stuff this week, and then, I got sick in the last few days, so we'll get to some more stuff very soon, but it is 1 year. I believe this next week coming up, next week is exactly 1 year since I opened channel memberships on this channel, and we are very close. We're so close. We only need a few more, and we're going to hit 300. 300 channel, which is a number that I didn't think we would hit yet. And the fact that we're that close and we're probably going to hit it, certainly by WrestleMania, I'm sure we'll hit it, is very cool. And so I want to just take a moment to thank everybody who has joined and become a Sound Off Superstar or a Sound Off Legend, which is the higher tier. You get the retro audio, the lost episodes. Thank you, guys. That means a lot. And Scott, you've been a member for an entire year, so I appreciate that. Oh, yes, Chris. So, speaking of being a channel member, I am doing a watch-along 1 week from today. So you know, I'm glad you reminded me. We did a watch-along for the 1992 Royal Rumble match back in January, and it was pretty well-received. It was just for channel members only. And so we're doing another one next Wednesday. It'll be sometime during the day, probably late morning, early afternoon. And it'll be for the Bret Hart-Steve Austin submission match at WrestleMania 13. Next Wednesday is March 23rd. It is the exact day, 25 years ago, of WrestleMania 13. So I thought it would only be appropriate to do a watch-along for one of the greatest matches in WWF history. So next Wednesday, you're not just going to get a Dynamite review at night, but during the day, we'll do a watch-along for channel members. So now's a great time. Just saying, now's a great time to become a channel member. So thank you, Chris, for reminding me about that. SNK fan 01, can you create your dream stable with the current AEW roster? I don't really know if I have a dream stable. You know, honestly, I'm liking what they're doing with putting Moxley and Danielson together with Regal, and if they start to add people, yeah, I don't know about dream stable, but that automatically becomes my favorite group in the entire company. If they build it up a little bit more. I don't know that I have a dream stable, though. I feel like we have so many stables already as it is in AEW. I don't know that there's any group that I would want to see. I don't really have one, honestly, off the top of my head. I would love to just see them continue to build up the whole Regal Danielson Moxley thing and maybe add a couple of younger guys to it, and I think that would be very cool. It would be almost like their version of Diamond Mine. You know, I like Diamond Mine and NXT. It would kind of be like their version. Miguel says, I can't believe WWE saw Rosa as a referee. And Tasha Steeles, if you know who that is, as a ref. Well, isn't Tasha Steeles, I believe, is the new Knockouts champion, I believe, in Impact. I remember calling a couple of her matches when she wrestled for House of Glory just a couple of years ago. And now look at her. She's the Impact Knockouts champion. Yeah, and Rosa did either try out or she was going to try out. I actually think it might have been her choice to try out for the referee position, but Yeah, I don't know. It didn't seem like WWE really saw anything in her beyond that, and it's puzzling to me. But their loss is AEW's gain. So good for Tony Khan. The Mets are one of the teams that almost caused baseball to still be on strike. Are you blaming the Mets? Are you blaming us? Well, you're not wrong. The Mets have been responsible for a lot of misery, so why shouldn't you guys be in on it? Why should we be the only ones to suffer? Where's my mug with my hot tea? I had hot tea a little earlier, actually, a few hours ago. I had a wild strawberry. And you take a bottle of honey, and you just squeeze some of the bottle into the bottom of the mug and mix it up. Honey is supposed to be good as well for your throat. Chris, yes, you missed it. You missed me, the booker. Better Lex, Lakers Pats wants to know. Lex Luger or Lexington Steel? I don't know how many people are going to know the Lexington Steel reference. Let's see here. Who we got? SNK Fan 01, kick in the Coyotes with contusions. Kicked him in the Coyotes. You're still gonna browbeat me for that, aren't you? Never gonna live that one down. All right, guys. I want to thank you all for sticking with me here. This has been a fun stream. And a lot of Super Chat love tonight. I love it. Hope I answered all your questions as best I could. Some stuff, obviously, I'm going to be saving for the podcast on Sunday. I'm going to have a lot to say about Scott Hall. And unfortunately, him leaving us this week at the age of 63, passing away, taking off life support back on Monday. Very sad situation, and there's no way to minimize it. One of the most influential figures in the history of the business. I mean, the things that he was part of and really what he was part of with the start and the genesis of that NWO storyline is something that is still looked back on in a major way today. And you can't minimize the influence that he had on the wrestling business. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about his ups and downs. I'm going to give you a lot of feedback on my thoughts personally on Scott Hall and what I think his best matches were and a lot of other stuff. So hopefully I will be able to do him justice, and hopefully you will tune in for that and everything else that is coming up this weekend. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you again. And probably we'll see you for the SmackDown only review on Friday night, but I'll let you guys know if anything changes on Twitter. So again, thank you for the love. Take care.